Today is Friday, December 30th, and this is BOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, a surprise move by Russian President Vladimir Putin.
He has said that he will not lower himself to the U.S. level, as he put it.
Also had the latest on the Syrian nationwide ceasefire. We'll have our weekly conversation with social media expert Andrew Palshevsky on the issue of fake news again today. It's all on today's International Edition. We begin International Edition on this Friday in Moscow, the epicenter of some major news stories over the past few days, to say the least. We welcome VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf. Daniel, thanks for being with us. Let's start out with the battle between the leaders of the United States and Russia as pertains to sanctions and retaliation. What's the latest we have?
Well, the latest is that we've seen an announcement from Russian President Vladimir Putin that he will not be doing the tit-for-tat expulsion of U.S. diplomats, as suggested to him by the foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov. Instead, he has said that he will not lower himself to the U.S. level, as he put it, and will instead consider what President-elect Donald Trump does when he takes office later in January and decide what moves will be needed, if any, in the U.S.-Russia relationship. He's also made a rather shrewd move of inviting the children of U.S. diplomats to visit the New Year tree inside of the Kremlin. So basically trying to take the high road and say that he's not going to be petty in this dispute, and that he doesn't need to, in his own words, more or less, stoop to the level of the U.S. in taking these kinds of diplomatic expulsion actions against the other side.
Is this in keeping with the personality of the Russian president?
You know, it's quite fascinating. It's a very shrewd move on his part. He's obviously wanting to try and maintain good relations with the U.S. in the sense that President-elect Donald Trump will be coming into office shortly, and he wants to give him as much support as he can to be able to improve relations with Russia. So certainly it seems like a smart move on his part. President Putin is known for being tactical. It's long been argued whether or not he has a strategic mind in terms of what actions he takes, but certainly he is often complimented by analysts for being a very shrewd tactician. And certainly this move to try and paint the Kremlin as being above tit-for-tat sanctions is one way to go along further with that that personality characteristic and the way that he wants to be seen in the conflict with the United States. It's also, of course, been a move by the Kremlin, by Russian officials, and by the foreign ministry here in Russia to really go after the administration of President Barack Obama in his last days in office, to essentially heap as much blame and vitriol on the White House as they can in anticipation of a real change in policy from the United States, and also playing into the relationship with President-elect Donald Trump, who, of course, as we know, did not have a very good relationship with President Obama in the election that was going on, although, of course, they have had a quite friendly transition from what we understand and what's been coming out of both the White House and from Trump appointees.
What has been Russia's stance on these accusations of hacking and cyber spying?
Denial, 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 which is a long-held tradition among the Russian authorities. They say that it's a complete fabrication on the U.S. side, that it's, you know, being made up for political reasons, that it's anti-Russian. They've very much been pouring a lot of venom towards the Obama administration as it's on its way out the door, trying to set the stage for some sort of improved relations under President-elect Trump and his administration, which, of course, as we know, has some players involved who have close ties with Russia and some very positive ties with Russia. Whether or not that's going to translate into any sort of real change in the U.S.-Russia relationship will be interesting to see. As we know, of course, President-elect Trump has some very tough players that he's going to be dealing with in the U.S. Congress, including members of his own political party who have very different views towards Russia than he does.
And especially this hacking. Now, what we have heard so far is, as you just said, on the diplomatic front. A senior White House official said that all this publicity and publicly announced actions are not the end of the American response, saying that there will be other measures that will not be publicized. Does the same hold true for Russia? Is there a thought that they might increase cyber attacks as well?
Well, I'm sure that there will be a lot of things going on behind the scenes that that could come out later. Certainly, you know, these kinds of cyber measures, attacks, and hacking take place. You know, electronic spying and so forth is not anything that's limited to one country. And certainly, if one side does take some sort of action, you would expect that there would be some sort of reaction from the other side. So I don't imagine that this is going to be the end of hacking allegations made against Russia. Certainly, they have capabilities here. And if you talk even to Russian cybersecurity experts, they will acknowledge that, you know, at the government level, there's certainly a lot of this taking place. And it's, in fact, been increasing as technology increases. And certainly whenever we do have these tensions between countries, it is a way to take measures without actually resorting to conventional means such as military action. It is part of what's considered the new hybrid warfare that we're seeing increasingly being used in these type of conflicts in the modern age.
We're speaking with VOA's Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf. Let's move on to Syria now. So far, the ceasefire brokered by and announced by Russia seems to be holding. What's the latest on that? As we know, the United States was left out of these talks.
Yeah, there's been, of course, a lot of hopes and expectations that a Syria-wide ceasefire actually could hold, although there have been some reporting of clashes taking place near Damascus, according to the Syrian Observatory and at least one rebel official who was quoted by the Reuters news agency. So whether or not, you know, this Syria ceasefire is able to hold, of course, as we know, past ceasefires have been put in place and they didn't hold. There's, you know, renewed fighting took place. United Nations efforts and, of course, U.S. efforts to broker a ceasefire have failed in the past. One of the big differences that we see with this latest ceasefire is that there have been direct talks between the Russian authorities and rebels. According to the Russian officials, they'd been in discussions for the last couple of months, the moderate opposition in Syria, to try and come to some sort of an agreement. That seems to have produced some serious steps forward when we see this ceasefire announcement. And we've also seen, in difference to previous ceasefires, the Russian and Turkish authorities have come out as guarantors, saying that they are going to make sure that those who they have influence on in this conflict, meaning the Syrian government for the Russian side, President Bashar al-Assad, and on the Turkish side, of course, some of the people that they have influence on inside of Syria and the northern part of the country, they've come out as guarantors saying that they are going to make sure that the people they have influence on will keep to this agreement. Whether or not that's actually going to happen, of course, we'll have to see in the coming days, weeks, and months. But it certainly has raised a lot of hopes and expectations that this nearly six-year conflict could be coming to some sort of an end if we can get to peace talks, as the Russian side announced, are expected to take place at some point in Kazakhstan.
Is there any feeling that you have been able to perceive that this might work because the United States has not been part of these negotiations?
Well, certainly there were large disagreements between the United States and Russia in the way that things were being handled inside Syria. Having one less player at the table could make it a little easier. The Turkish side and the Russian side have recently come to better relations after a very serious tensions that developed a little over a year ago when we saw the Turkish military shoot down that Russian bomber jet along the Turkish border with Syria. And there were some serious concerns that the conflict could expand even further as Turkey is a member of NATO, the Western Military Alliance. That of course, that relationship did a 180 then this summer when we saw President Erdogan in Turkey make efforts to improve those relations with President Putin in Russia. They both seem to need that win, and it did happen. They now are on much better terms, and certainly that relationship has really helped to bring about this ceasefire. But we have to keep in mind that they're still on opposite sides of the fence when it comes to this conflict. Turkey does not want to see President Bashar al-Assad in power in Syria. Russia is fully backing him, at least for the time being. So certainly the ceasefire happened because these two countries were able to mend their relations, and having the U.S. Not involved in those negotiations probably made it a lot easier for them to come to some sort of an agreement on how to operate on the ground. But whether or not it's going to last, whether it's going to produce a real solid peace and bring this conflict to an end, is the real question. And everyone is, of course, going to be hoping for a lasting peace. Whether or not these players can make that happen, is up in the air.
Well, this is the last weekend of 2016. Overall, how would you rank this year? How would you rate this year or explain this year in relations between Russia and the United States?
Well, we've seen some pretty big downfalls in the relationship. I mean, ever since Russia annexed Crimea and Ukraine, and then started its military support for rebels in the eastern part of Ukraine, Western sanctions that came after that from the United States, from Europe, really dropped the relations between the West and Russia, and particularly the United States, of course, to levels we have not seen since the Cold War. There's very serious tensions. Russia and the Russian government, the Kremlin, has really exacerbated those with state media, really demonizing the West, demonizing the NATO Western Military Alliance, the administration of Barack Obama. So a lot of venom coming out of some of these outlets that has really made it, I think, difficult for any progress to be made. The election of Donald Trump as the next president of the United States, of course, is raising a lot of expectations and hopes among Russian officials and Russians in general that that relationship could change. To some degree, I think that they're raising expectations a little bit too high in terms of what they think could happen in a change between the two sides. It will be interesting to see exactly how far President-elect Donald Trump, once he takes office, is willing to go to try and improve relations and what he's able to actually do dealing with his own party and Congress. especially when we see these ongoing accusations of Russian hacking into U.S. political organizations. And there's still going to be tensions in Ukraine. There's still going to be tensions with our allies between our allies in Europe and Russia. So I don't imagine that things are going to improve as quickly as maybe a lot of people here in Russia are hoping. But certainly, it has raised expectations that that possibility could be around the corner.
Joining us from Moscow, VOA's Moscow correspondent, Daniel Scharf. Daniel, thank you and Happy New Year to you. Among the top stories we're covering for you on VOA, Russian President Vladimir Putin says Moscow will not expel U.S. diplomats in response to sanctions imposed Thursday by U.S. President Barack Obama. A nationwide ceasefire appears to be largely holding Friday across most of Syria. Iraqis in Mosul face car bombs and airstrikes Friday on the second day of a renewed push to retake the city. At least six people are killed, seven others injured when militants attack a town southwest of the Somali capital of Mogadishu. And Santa Claus's Facebook account has been reinstated after the social media company suspended his access and demanded proof of identity on Christmas Day. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
This is International Edition from the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman, and joining me, as he does every week, is Andrew Palshevsky. He is our expert, our guru, if you will, of social media.
I just come for the compliments, really. That's why I'm... No, we always have a good chat. We always have a good time.
That's why I pile it on. Plus, you pay me for it. Yeah. We have been talking over the past couple of weeks, few weeks, about fake news. I, as you know, I think this is a major, major concern, especially for journalists. And I just showed you something from Mother Jones Magazine, which usually is a left-leaning magazine. But it says... There used to be a few basic rules for success in the news business. One was that publishing verifiably false information would drive audiences away. And then it says social media platforms are doing the opposite. They just need the numbers, no matter what they put up there, of people going and signing in and reading it.
Yeah, it's something that's drawn people in, and we've talked about it in context of the election, where certainly fake news has been a problem, but we're starting to see some troubling instances now where it's affecting security. So we saw this week, and this was something that you forwarded along to me that we discussed off-air, the former Israeli defense minister having been quoted as saying that he was going to destroy Pakistan if they sent troops into Syria, and that provoked a response from Pakistan's defense ministry. Problem was, the entire thing was fake. The former Israeli defense minister never said that, and so Pakistan was reacting to a fake news story. So they had to actually do some backtracking and say, no, we're not actually going to do this. It was our mistake to respond in this way. But to think that that could provoke a response like that from something that's fictitious is incredibly troubling. It puts lives at risk. I think that's the thing that people don't realize, is that lives are put at risk potentially with some of these fake news stories and how they're reacted to.
I think what a lot of us journalists are really concerned about is that this becoming the norm, that someone can do it, someone can lie, someone can put false information forward, and it will be taken more and more seriously.
And it's not even that, you know, it is that, absolutely. But even more than a person doing it is when you put it in an automated context. And that's the other fake news story this week. Facebook activating their safety check feature that allows people to check in and tell people that they're safe in the event of an attack or a natural disaster. And they activated this safety check feature in Bangkok, Thailand because of an explosion there. Problem is there wasn't an explosion. It was a guy throwing firecrackers off a roof. And the reason why this was activated was because there was a lot of chatter on Facebook about this, and it was an automated system. It picked up on that chatter and said, okay, if it hits a certain threshold, we activate the safety check feature, and that was what happened. And in fact, Facebook has been doing this more and more because of this automation. They've been activating safety check more and more. And again, this puts, you know, potentially people's lives at risk. It creates false information, and it just creates a lot of issues with what's real, what's not, what's true, what's false, and what is safety. So we'll see if Facebook revises this. As they've done in the past, they've revised some of their editorial guidelines, taking out some of the automation after problems there or adjusting it. We'll see if they do the same for the safety check feature.
Andrew Palczewski, we will continue this conversation into the new year.
Absolutely.
Very happy and healthy new year to you.
Happy new year to you as well.
That's going to wrap up our program. You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our engineer, Justin Thwaites. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a joyous and healthy new year.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States values freedom of the press as a key component of democratic governance. Unfortunately, in too many places, the press has become a target of retaliation by those who feel threatened by freedom of expression and transparency in democratic processes. In its annual census of journalists imprisoned worldwide, the Committee to Protect Journalists, or CPJ, found that more journalists are jailed around the world today than at any time since the CPJ began keeping detailed records in 1990. As of December 1, 2016, 259 journalists were jailed this year, compared to the 199 behind bars worldwide in 2015. Turkey accounts for nearly a third of the global total. Amid an ongoing crackdown that accelerated after a failed coup attempt in July, Turkey jailed at least 81 journalists, accusing them of anti-state activity. In addition, more than 100 news outlets have been silenced. The jailing of journalists continues to be a global problem, with China, Egypt, Eritrea, and Ethiopia as some of the other worst offenders. This year marks the first time since 2008 that Iran was not among the top five worst jailers, as many of those sentenced in the 2009 post-election crackdown have served their sentences and been released. However, Tehran is still stifling press freedom by sending journalists to jail, including filmmaker Kayvan Karimi, who is serving a sentence of 1 year in prison and 223 lashes in relation to his documentary about political graffiti, Writing in the City. The press is too often a target of retaliation by governments that repress freedom of expression and transparency. The United States will continue to speak out for the protection of journalists and for their vital role in open societies and defending the truth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials.
Africa.